instead, you get to suffer through. I mean, you get to hear Josh Herndon bring his story and stories from Romania. I had the privilege of traveling to Romania. Some of you will remember about 4 years, just coming up on 4 years. We finally figured out 4 years ago. I lost a whole year, but that was probably because of COVID. I just lost a whole year. But you supported me in going to Romania to be with the Herndons and to not just hear about what they're doing, but to actually see it, participate on a tiny level, and be connected with them. And I have had the very unique privilege of hanging out with them yesterday and last night and now this morning. So you are going to really, really love hearing these stories. And I did this last night in La Porte. I encourage the folks, don't just listen with your ears and with your mind. Listen with your heart to these stories. They will challenge you and what you think you know about what missions are. They will put things into perspective as far as what we face here in the United States as Christians. It really will put things into perspective if you'll let it and if you'll listen. So I want to introduce Josh, his wife Shannon, his lovely wife, his daughter Karis, and Caden is somewhere. He might be at the table. He's at the table. Okay. Thank you, Caden, for being at the table. I hope you can hear me out there. But again, welcome him warmly, as I know only Southlake can do, and enjoy what he has to say.
Thank you. Yeah, my children have gotten very good at disappearing whenever we go somewhere. I think it's evidence that we spend too much time together. So I assume he's still here. He might have taken the car somewhere. He's only 14, so that might be a problem. But one problem at a time, right? We'll deal with that. We'll deal with that later. Ministry in Europe has looked very different, as you can possibly imagine, that when you go to a place where the stories of Christ kind of originated and have moved over to here hundreds of years ago, that people over there probably understand what the gospel is, have heard the stories of Jesus, and know about God. And so we've had to find creative ways to share that good news, to share those stories with people who already know the story, to find ways to build community, to build inroads with people in different parts of the country where we live. And one of the ways that we've been able to do that is through sports. And we found that when we introduce new sports, sports that the kids have never played before, that there is a different type of reception that happens. We always have people ask us, well, why don't you use soccer? We know that they play soccer. We know that they play soccer really well. Most of the best teams in the world, of the soccer teams in the world, they do come from Europe. So why don't you do that? And I try to explain to them is it's because they play soccer so well that makes using soccer as a ministry so difficult. Because if we were to do a sports camp, if we were to use soccer and invited the kids out onto the field to play, then of course the kids who play soccer really well are the first ones out onto the field, and they don't really share the field that well. So the girls don't get to play, the boys who don't play soccer don't get to play, and this makes it very difficult for us to minister to large groups of children. There's also other reasons why we don't use soccer. I'm not very good at it. And because soccer's not a real sport. So there's people who understand that. So what we do is we use real sports, specifically American football and baseball. And you can probably imagine the chaos that ensues when you advertise for a sports camp there and we say, okay, we're going to have 40 to 50 kids and we end up having 100 to 120. And it's very difficult for us to tell kids no, they can't come. And so we try to bring all of these kids onto the field, and you're probably counting in your head, well, none of these sports can take 120 kids. Well, we've tried. And that baseball outfield gets really crowded by the time that 60th kid gets out there. You can probably also imagine just how chaotic it is when we begin to bring out the equipment that these children have never used before. So we bring out the bats and the balls and the gloves and the helmets, and we tell kids not to touch them until we explain what they're there for. Now, it's been a long time since we've been in the States. I don't know how well American kids listen. Probably about as well as Romanian, Spanish, and Greek kids do. So you can probably imagine that the first thing they run to are the bats. Begin to pick them up and swing them just inches from their siblings' heads. We've also had to explain just how hard a baseball is. And they quickly find this out as the first kid who runs to first base, everyone tries to peg him. And baseball turns into dodgeball. I could keep telling you stories about just how problematic teaching new sports is to kids in Europe, but I don't have to explain it because I have a video to show you. So if you could cue up that first video, we call this Terror in Transylvania in Return.
Take me out to the ball game. Take me out to the crowd. Buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jack. I don't care if I never get back, so it's rude, rude, rude. Take me out to the ball game. Take me out with the crowd. Buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jack. I don't care if I never get back. It's root, root, root for the home team. And if they don't win, what else is new? It's 1, 2, 3 strikes, you're out. At the old ball game. Play it, Jethro.
Those kids get running really fast at the end of camp. We really try to wrap it up as things get complicated, as you can see. I try to always have my family behind me when I'm speaking. It makes me feel like I'm not alone. No matter where we go, where we travel, we always try to take a picture of our family together, just the four of us. And then my wife always looks at me and says, now it's time for a good picture. And I know that's my cue to get out and take a picture of the three of them. So I want you to pray for my family. It's been a difficult time. We've been here in the States since the middle part of January, and that's a lot of time for the four of us to be alone in our vehicle on the road, traveling all over the country from church to church. And it's been a lot of time. Just that vehicle gets smaller by the day. That's not why I want you to pray for my kids. They're traveling around with perfect parents, so they don't need prayer for that. But I do want you to pray for them because they have had to spend considerable time with Shannon's parents, with my in-laws over in Newport, Oregon. And I feel bad that they've had so much time with my in-laws. After 4 years of ministry in Transylvania, I bring them all the way back here, and again, they're stuck with a blood-sucking monster. Things in our family have changed since the last time we were home. I guess we were in the States back in 2019 was the last time we were here, and a lot has changed for our family. Many members of our family have joined us on the mission field. Well, they haven't joined us. I mean, they're not like with us. Well, they're with us. They're not dead. I'll start over. Members of our family have also become missionaries with the Church of the Nazarene. Shannon's parents, my in-laws, after 40 years of pastoral ministry, felt like God was calling them into a new chapter in their life. And so they began praying about what that would look like and felt like God was calling them into missions. At the time, we were serving in the country of Greece, and they felt like they were being called to serve with us there. But when World Mission heard that they had 40 years of pastoral ministry and my father-in-law had his doctorate degree, they thought that there was a better place for them much further away from us. They sent them all the way over to Sri Lanka, the island nation off the coast of India. So this story had a great beginning. But then as we moved from Greece to Romania, they wanted to be much closer to us and moved from Sri Lanka to Bulgaria, the country just south of Romania, much, much closer to us. And this is what we call a plot twist or a crisis moment in our narrative. My mother-in-law, she gets invited back to the U.S. for a wedding because someone still likes her. I'm just kidding, it's family, it doesn't count. While she's on the plane coming back to the U.S., the entire world shuts down. That is the beginning of the quarantine, of the pandemic. So she lands in Texas and she is trapped there for months and months, 6,300 miles away from us in Romania and her husband in Bulgaria, which is what happens when Shannon's dad and I pray the same prayer. They were separated for about a third of a year, which I can only imagine was not long enough. The result of that is that they have since retired from missions. So what used to be a six-hour drive to get to us is back to being a 15-hour flight for them. I tell you that to let you know that things in the world are improving. My sister Sarah and her husband Camilo and their three children are also missionaries in the Church of the Nazarene, and they've been serving in the country of Equatorial Guinea. And if you don't know where Equatorial Guinea is, that's okay. They don't know either. They unfortunately have also decided to move much closer to us. Now, I don't want to give you the wrong impression that we don't want family with us. It's just that, that's it. They're moving from Africa to Europe to the country of Luxembourg. And if you don't know where Luxembourg is, that's okay. They don't know either. It'll be a 12-hour drive from where they will be moving to where we will be moving to in northern Italy. And halfway for both of us is a Swiss chocolate factory. Yeah, so now instead of pretending to be happy to see each other, we'll have something that will actually make us happy, if or when we ever meet in the middle. We have a table out there with some things for you to take a look at, things from the country that we have been living in, things from the country that we will soon be calling home. So if you have never seen or touched anything from Transylvania, this is your opportunity to do so. Vampiric viruses are a lot less dangerous than COVID-19. And it's quite possible those items have both. One of those viruses will help you live forever. And the other, well, just choose wisely. We have something out there that we're selling in Sigmondru, Romania, a town in the northern part of Transylvania. In our church, the women of that church have a sewing group. And by making Romanian dolls, this is how they support the work that's going on there. Stories that I will share with you this morning. One of the things that they've been making for a while are Romanian dolls. Now, in the past, every doll has looked exactly the same because they know what we Americans think, right? That all Romanians look alike. Well, we decided to help you out. Now we have dolls with different hair colors, different outfits, made with love by our Nazarene sisters thousands of miles away, and with the blood, sweat, and tears of people that we love very much. More blood than sweat and tears, because that's how we roll in Dracula's homeland. We are selling these out there. We used to have a boy-girl pair, but all the boys are gone. I don't know if that was on purpose or by accident, but the girls are now alone. We're selling those one for $15, two for $25. And after my humble handler's fee of 85%, all the profits go to them. In the past, we've had another doll that we've been able to sell. I asked the sewing group there to make a local celebrity. We had Dracula dolls. This got me in a lot of trouble with the rest of the mission team. They weren't happy that I had commissioned the making of this doll. And also, they weren't happy to find out that I was coming back to the U.S. and selling those Dracula dolls for $6.66. They told me they wouldn't be making any more. But if you do want a Dracula doll, you let me know. And I will pass on word that there is nothing that this group wants more than a plush doll of the Dark Lord himself. I would love to give that message from one Nazarene to another. Also, do you guys pray for your missionaries? Yeah. Yeah, you should have started before I came here. For the two of you that I heard respond that says you pray for your missionary, man, this is gonna be a rough time we have together. We have prayer cards out there. We want you to feel free to grab one as a reminder that you need to start praying for your missionaries. As you will see on the big picture, it is a celebration that our daughter is leaving us. She is not going to be joining us on our future mission trips. She will be staying here to attend university in the fall. She's always made bad decisions in her life, so it shouldn't surprise me that she's decided to abandon this team. Anyway, the picture is a celebration of the fact that she's no longer welcome on any of our future journeys. We also made the prayer cards especially big this year to cover up those missionaries you no longer pray for. And from the sounds of this group, that should not be too difficult. Okay, enough of the nonsense. Let's talk about me. The beard is a fairly new thing for me. I started growing it in Greece. It was a very cold winter when we were living there. We were living in the city of Panorama, a suburb of Thessaloniki. Pipes froze, they burst. We had no running water for a week, so I couldn't shave, and I just let it grow, and stuff started to grow. And then I would just cut it in the spring when it started getting warm. I did that for a few winters, even the winter before the start of the pandemic, and then, of course, with the quarantine, and we were quarantined for much longer than all of you here, I decided that we weren't going anywhere, so I just might as well let it go. But I started to realize that after we were released from our prison homes there, that the beard gave me powers that I didn't have before. I started to notice that people came up to me on the streets and started confessing their sins, as they do the bearded Orthodox priests that are there. Okay, well, not exactly, but I could tell that they wanted to. It's just that I have a face that says, no thanks, I'm not interested. I also noticed that the guys who were interested in my daughter before the pandemic were all of a sudden terrified of me. So, yeah, I was keeping it. But I especially noticed that children started to respond to me differently. We have a safe house for survivors of human trafficking in the Romanian capital of Bucharest. And after the quarantine, but still during the pandemic, we went there to make sure that everyone there who was living in that house were doing all right. We walk into the house, and this little boy here in the middle, Alex, he sees me walk in. Now, I knew that he knew me or that he should have known me. Either way, he shouldn't have wanted to kill me, and that's kind of the look that he gives. So as we lock eyes, he immediately puts his head down and begins coming to my direction, just slowly shuffling his feet in the same creepy way that my mother-in-law does at 6 a.m. when she comes to visit us. He makes his way up to me, stares up, and whispers something. I don't hear what he's saying, so I ask him to repeat, and he does. I still don't hear him. So I get on my knees right in front of him, eye to eye with the shy little beast, and I ask him to repeat once more what he said. He looks me in the eyes and says, "Yesht Mosh Krachun? Are you Old Man Christmas?" And so while I begin mentally drafting the letter that I'm going to write to the real Santa about how this kid now deserves absolutely nothing, he just moves into the wish list portion of this visit. He says that he wants a drone. Nothing big, nothing fancy, just something that he can fly around the safe house. The same safe house filled with 15 women, 3 infants, and this group of small kids. Now, I would love to give Alex a gift that makes everyone around him miserable, but I chose not to. I hope he's enjoying that priceless piece of coal instead. You know, any kid his age can do just as much damage with that if he's talented, so here's hoping. You know, when I think about these kids, when I think about their moms, when I think about the people that our churches are ministering to there in Romania, I think about how the pandemic has affected all of them differently. Some of them have really thrived during this time of limited contact, and there's others like me who have really struggled. I think about the older women who attend our church in Bucharest, who come to the church for many reasons, but one of those reasons being to escape the abuse that they are facing at home. And all of a sudden, a pandemic closes that door, and now they're trapped there, victims of abuse. But then I think about our younger women who were victims of human trafficking before the pandemic, but because of the pandemic, saw their slave quarters closed, giving them just enough time to escape, and now those young women are free, victims of abuse no longer. But then I think about our little girls up in Sigmondru in northern Transylvania, who always had the watchful eyes of those within the church to make sure that they were safe and cared for. And all of a sudden, they no longer had that because of a pandemic. They are little girls married off to their teenage boyfriends during this time. And now they too are trapped, victims of lost childhoods and domestic violence. I want to tell you some of their stories. I want to tell you where we've seen God working, but also where we still need to see him work. But more importantly, I want to introduce you to members of my family. And because they're members of my family, they are now members of your family, the family of God. I want you to know that some of these stories have happy endings, and some of them don't. But we have been able to see the grace and love and faithfulness of our Creator through each and every one of them. I also want you to know that these are not my stories. These are your stories. Because of your love and support of missions around the world, and more importantly, your involvement in the World Evangelism Fund, and especially Faith Promise today, you make the work that your Nazarene brothers and sisters do around the world possible. These are your stories. I want to tell you about Anca. In Sigmaju, Romania, the church is a child development center through the week. We have children from that town come to the church, and here in the church, they sing songs, and they hear stories, and they make crafts, and they eat a meal. Now, these kids, they sing songs at home, but they're not good songs. They hear stories at home, but they're not good stories. Rarely do they make anything at home, and when they do, it's usually with dirty and broken things. And rarely do they eat a meal at home, which means that when they come to the church, this is probably the only meal they're going to eat that day. Sigmaju is a poor community. It's a Roma gypsy community, and it's a transient community. Most of the men of that town have left Romania to go find work in other parts of Europe. And this wouldn't be so bad if they would just take the money that they earn and send it back home to take care of their families. But they don't. Instead, they end up staying where they're working, starting second families there, leaving their wives home alone to take care of everything. Now, I don't want to put the wrong image in your mind, one of a professional woman in her 20s or 30s. Most of the moms that I am talking about are in their teens and not their late teens. Anka is 10 years old when she becomes part of our children's program, coming to where all the children of the village come. And I'll be honest, it doesn't take too much to get her to come based on what's going on at home. You see, Anka, at 10 years of age, is being beaten by her mother. She is also the servant of her house. Her job is to wash the clothes of everyone living there, and there are a lot of people living there. And with no running water and little to no electricity in the house, washing the clothes of everyone there means gathering them all up by hand, walking across a field to a runoff creek that is there, wading in into whatever filth is down there, and washing those clothes by hand. And it means doing it in the cold and frigid Transylvanian winters. But when the washing is done, well, there's cooking to be done. And after the cooking is done, there's cleaning to be done. And after the cleaning is done, there are siblings to be taken care of. And when the siblings are taken care of, well, then there's a beating to be had. Because somewhere between the washing and the cooking and the cleaning and the taking care of the other kids, well, there's always something that doesn't meet mom's satisfaction. But when Anka comes to that church, she is able to be a 10-year-old again. She's able to sing songs about a God who loves her, hear stories about a Jesus who heals those around him. She's able to make a craft and sneak it into her home as a constant reminder that she has a family that loves her and cares for her and prays for her. And she's able to scarf down a bowl of soup and a sandwich, a meal that she knows will never be waiting for her at home. And then just like that, a pandemic closes this door. Anka turns 11. And she runs out of hope. If she's going to be a slave, she might as well be one outside the house. If she's going to be a servant, it might as well be to her own home. So she does what many young Roma gypsy girls her age do when they run out of hope. She's married off to her teenage boyfriend. At the age of 11, Anka becomes a wife. And now at almost 12, Anka is a mother. Before the pandemic, coming to our children's program, she now returns as part of our Mothers and Babies program. A program started by the Sigmaju Church of the Nazarene to help moms just like Anka fit into their new roles, take care of their new responsibilities. I want you to know that the church is still involved in Anka's life, just in a much different way, a more depressing way. You know, every time I see Anka, I picture her there in the upper room with the rest of the disciples after the crucifixion of Jesus. You see, they've had all this time with the Son of God, and things have been going so incredibly well, and then just like that, it's all over. I picture Anka sitting around the table with the rest of them as the questions begin to swirl in their minds. Do they really think that it's all over? Don't they know that Sunday is coming? That Jesus can't be contained? That he's walking this way? That he's right outside the door? And Anka, like the other disciples, begins to realize that it's not that the story is over, it's just that a new chapter is starting. I want you to know that you are a part of that next chapter in Anka's life. The children's program that she was a part of before the pandemic. The mothers and babies program that she is a part of now. All of the work that is being done around her is only possible because of your love and support of missions around the world. Anka is your faith promise story. For every Anka, though, we have a Betty. Betty is different than a lot of the other girls that we minister to. Betty comes from a two-parent household, but this doesn't help her much. You see, her father is an alcoholic, and he is a violent drunk. At that. At 11 years of age, Betty sees her mom packing a suitcase and believes that for the very first time they're going on a trip together. She gets all excited and runs to her mom to ask where they're going. Her mom says, "You're not going anywhere. I'm going. You're staying. I just can't take this anymore." And 11-year-old Betty doesn't understand why mom gets to leave this abusive house, but she has to stay. It doesn't take long for dad to bring home a new girlfriend. And it doesn't take long for Betty to realize that this is going to be a fairy tale. Just the wrong kind. You see, dad's new girlfriend is the storybook wicked stepmother. Betty comes home from school one day and sees a small stool sitting by the front door. And she wonders what that's for. She soon finds out. Betty's new job is to come home, take off her backpack, and set it on the floor. Then go to the stool, get on her knees facing it, and this is when dad's girlfriend walks in. She then has to take off her shoes, wash her feet, and then this woman slams her foot into the top of Betty's head and screams in her ear, "Do you obey me?" Every single day for 4 years. Betty finally reaches an age where she is able to work outside of the house, and man, she couldn't be more excited to leave. As soon as she starts her new job, though, a young man begins to notice her. It's the way that she laughs that gives it away. This young man begins doing everything he can to try to get her to separate her from her family. And based on the abuse at home, this isn't very difficult to do. By the end of that first week, Betty is being trafficked by that young man. But I told you Betty is different than our other girls. Betty, you see, is a fighter. But when you fight, this comes at a cost. You see, her trafficker lives close to a self-serve car wash there in Romania, and it is a cold January, like most of our Januaries are. So he goes out in the middle of the night, takes the hose, and begins to spray water on the concrete slab, letting it freeze, and then forces Betty to come out and sleep on that frozen pad all night long during the entire month of January. Betty gets horribly ill, and word gets back to her father that she is very sick. He comes to get her, and she believes she's finally saved until her dad grabs her by the arm, marches her home, locks her in a room, never letting her leave. But then a pandemic gives her just enough time to find a way out of that room. She gets to the phone and calls the police, begins to weep while she's on the phone with them when they ask her the question, "Where can you go?" Betty realizes there is no place for her to go. She can't stay trapped in a room for the rest of her life, and she can't leave because a trafficker is out there on the streets looking for her. There is no place for her. And that is when Open Door, Ușa Deschisă, our safe house there in Bucharest, gets the call. When the police invade the home of the trafficker, they find that there are many women that are being held there. One of them is Betty's best friend. But as Betty comes to us, her friend doesn't want to quite yet. She just has her new freedom, and she wants to experience independence again. Betty comes, and she in this house, she's safe, and she is warm, and she is fed. But before the trafficker is fought, before he's caught, he finds Betty's best friend and kills her. It's here in this house that Betty is able to hear for the first time the story of Jesus Christ. Not even knowing what it means, she hears about this story and gets all excited about the story of salvation. What's amazing is she doesn't hear about Jesus from the pastor of our local Nazarene church because it's the pandemic and he's trapped at home. She doesn't hear about Jesus from me. I'm trapped in my own home miles and miles away. She hears about Jesus Christ from one of our other human trafficking survivors, Kati, who came to Christ as soon as she came to this house. Kati has become the spiritual leader of that home. Tells Betty about Jesus. Our church in Bucharest was able to open for 2 weeks before we were forced by the government to close again, and those 2 weeks were enough. As Betty decides that she wants to be baptized into this new faith, that she wants to publicly declare her newfound faith in Jesus. You know, every time I think about Betty, I picture her there on the shore of the sea with the rest of the Israelites. Being enslaved for what seems like forever, they find themselves free, yet just down the road, they find themselves trapped again. With certain death in front of them and the enemy pursuing them from behind, they realize there is no place for them to go. I want you to know that their rescue is a lot more miraculous than Betty's rescue, but please don't believe that it is any more important. With her trafficker behind bars, Betty is able to come to the church and sing praises to the same God who rescued those Israelites so many years ago. I want you to know that that same God is rescuing slaves today. I also want you to know that you are a part of Betty's story. The church where she worships, the services that are provided to her, the home where she now lives, is only possible because of your love and support of missions around the world. Betty is your mission story. She is your faith promise story. Tamea lives up in northern Transylvania with her father and many other people in this one-room house. And this house is dirty, one of the dirtiest houses that I have ever seen. But Tamea's story is a sad one. She comes from a long line of sad story. You see, Tamea's mom was also a child bride at 11 years of age, given to her 14-year-old boyfriend, almost immediately becomes pregnant and gives birth to a little baby boy, the baby boy that will be Tamea's older brother. But Tamea's mom, she's an 11-year-old, and she longs to do what other 11-year-old girls do, but knows that she needs to take care of this newborn baby in her arms. It is another cold winter there in Transylvania. So Tamea's mom goes to the little iron stove that sits there in the corner of the room, starts a fire, and then lays her baby on the floor in front of it to keep it warm, then runs out and watches the boys play in the field. Tamea's mom should have made sure that the fire took. She didn't. She comes back inside the house and finds her baby frozen to death on the floor. Tamea's mom ends up having 12 children and doesn't stick around to take care of any of them. Tamea grows up believing that there is no one in her life who loves her, no one who cares about her, until she starts walking the dirt roads of that town and hears that there is a place. A place down another dirt road through the wide iron fence, a place where the children of the community come. They walk in and they sing songs. They hear stories. They make crafts. They eat a meal. Tamea becomes a part of our children's program, learning about Jesus there. Every time the doors are open, she finds herself there in our church and then goes home to a house covered in walnuts. Walnuts that she is forced to spend the weekend searching for in the bear-infested woods of Transylvania. But at least she knows there's a family who loves her, who cares for her, who prays for her, until all of a sudden a pandemic closes that door. Tamea also runs out of hope and unfortunately becomes her mother. 12 years of age, given to her 14-year-old boyfriend, almost immediately becomes pregnant, and with the arrival of the baby comes the arrival of the abuse by her adolescent groom. She's still with the father of that child. We moved them into a building that the church owns there in that community. Yet every time I drive by this dirt road and look off to my right at the apartment sitting there on the corner of the street, I look up there on the second floor to the apartment on the left and think, there sits yet another girl who before the pandemic was part of our children's program, but now comes back as part of our mothers and babies program. But at least she knows that that family is still there. She can see them from outside her window down that same dirt road that Anka walks. There is a church that loves her still. Every time I think about Tamea, I picture her there in the belly of the fish with Jonah, wondering how it is that she got there, a victim of lost opportunities and ignored advice. At least I can understand Tamea's story just a little bit better. A very small 12-year-old girl, so small she doesn't even look like she's 12. From a family of abuse and neglect, is a lot different than a grown man running from his calling. Yet there in the fish, they both sit, wondering if they will ever get a second chance. I want you to know that Tamea will have that second chance, that she is going to again hear the story about the man who spent 3 days and 3 nights in the belly of the fish, and she is going to know exactly what he's going through. But more importantly, she is going to hear about the one who spent 3 days and 3 nights in the belly of the earth, who rose again to give her new life, a life that she desperately needs and a hope that she is searching for. I also want you to know that you are a part of Tamea's story, the children's program that she was a part of before, the mothers and babies program that she is a part of now. Everything that is done for her, even the house she lives in, is possible because of each and every one of you. Your love and support of missions makes this possible. Tamea is your mission story. She is your faith promise story. I have one more I want to share with you. This is Roberta. Roberta was 14 years old when she was trafficked. Abused not only by the trafficker, but by the trafficker's two brothers, his father, his grandfather, and his uncle. She was told, "You belong to us, and this abuse is your seal. You are ours." And when they were done with her, they began to sell her to other men. During this time, Roberta is forced to get two abortions, gets pregnant a third time, and the trafficker absolutely loses it. He decides that he's going to do whatever it takes to get her to lose this baby. So the first thing he does is strip her down and throw her out in the snow, then runs out and dumps buckets of cold water on her head, then runs back inside and watches from the window just to see what will happen. But Roberta lives, and the baby inside her lives. When that doesn't work, he calls up 10 of his friends to come over and abuse Roberta for 48 hours straight. And then she has to detail what each one did to her. But Roberta lives. And her baby lives. When that doesn't work, he begins to shove her into the corner of furniture, leaving marks and scars on her body that exist to this day. But Roberta lives and her baby lives. She tries to escape, and the sister of the trafficker grabs her by her hair in the yard, drags her back inside where they tie her to a chair for 2 days. No food, no water, no bathroom breaks, but Roberta lives and her baby lives. Finally, it's time for Roberta to give birth, but there is no rest for her. Even as she recovers, she's forced to work in the fields during the day. And then her trafficker drives her to clients at night, never allowed to leave that house with her baby in her arms. She comes back from working in the fields one day, and she notices that her baby is crying uncontrollably. So she begins to feed him, and that helps for a second, until she looks down and begins to study his face and notices that the baby has blood in his mouth. She asked the trafficker what happened. "I don't know, I guess he rolled out of bed," was the answer. She said, "He's 6 weeks old, he can't get up, he can't roll out of bed. I need to take him to the hospital." "Then take him to the hospital," the trafficker scoffs. For the very first time, Roberta is able to leave that house with her little baby in her arms. They walk into the hospital, and it is clear from the moment they walk in that they are victims of abuse. Both of them are admitted into the hospital, but only one of them is released. You see, it's found that Roberta's baby has a fractured skull, and pieces of his skull are lodged in his brain. That little baby goes in and out of a coma for a while, but it ends up being just too much for his little body to handle. Roberta comes to us, and the first thing that she has to do is bury her newborn baby boy. But for the first time, surrounded by women who know exactly what she's going through. She comes to that house and hears stories from the girls who are living there. She hears stories about a God who loves her, about a Jesus who died for her, about a Holy Spirit who will never leave her. And not even understanding how any of this is possible with the life that she has led, she decides she doesn't care. The story's just too good to pass up. During the same 2 weeks that we were able to open, and Betty says that she wants to be baptized, Roberta decides that she also wants to be baptized as a new follower of Jesus Christ and as a member of our family. Every time I see Roberta, I picture her there in the prison cell of Joseph in Genesis 39, sold into slavery by those who were supposed to love him most. Joseph is still able somehow to show the love of God to those that God brings into his path. And you know what? Roberta is able to do the exact same thing. She comes into our safe house and sees this little guy. This is Michael, Nicoletta's baby. And Nicoletta's story will have to wait for another day. But Nicoletta's family, they want Michael to be baptized into the Orthodox Church. The problem is that her family is part of her trafficking story. When Roberta hears this, she says, Nicoletta, I don't want you to go to your family. So if it is important for Michael to be baptized in the Orthodox Church, then I want to do it. I want to pay for the church. I want to pay for the flowers. I want to pay for the candles. And Nicoletta doesn't understand. Why do you want to do all of this for my son? She asks. Roberta says, I want to do for your baby boy what I can't do for mine. Those two young women join hands, walk out of our safe house through the security gate, down the street to the first Orthodox church they come to. They tell their story, and the church is so blessed by it that they offer to cover all of the costs and even call in the choir to sing. Just days after burying the son of one, those women come together to celebrate the birth and baptism of another. I want you to know that you are a part of Roberta's story. The church where she worships, the services that are provided to her, the home where she lives, are only possible because of each and every one of you. Roberta is your mission story. She is your faith promise story. Our story is changing a bit too as we have finished our time in Transylvania and will be moving to Italy, to the city of Florence. I want you to remember to pray for those that God has brought into our path in Romania. Pray for those that he's already ministering to in the country that we will soon call home. But more importantly, remember to pray for new members of your family, people who are coming to know who Jesus is, even from terrible histories that they've come from. I want you to know that there's nothing special about what my family of four does. We do what you do, just an ocean away. So keep being the hands and feet of Jesus here. And we will do what you do, just a little further from home. I have one more video I want to show. I want you to see what it looks like from our point of view. When people hear the good news of Jesus and it begins to radically transform their lives. But as you watch this, I want you to remember, these are your mission stories, your faith promise stories. God bless you.
You are not hidden. There's never been a moment you were forgotten. You are not hopeless. You have been broken, your innocence stolen. I hear. is no distance. It cannot be covered over and over. You're not defenseless. I'll be your shelter. I'll be your armor. I hear you whisper underneath your breath. I hear your SOS, your SOS. Not here.
All of those stories are all real. I've been in the church in Tigmandru and sang with the kids, and I didn't eat their soup. I couldn't do it. Not because it wouldn't taste good, but because I couldn't take a meal away from one of them, because I knew where my next meal was going to come. Been in the church in Sigishwara and met the pastor and his wife and their family, and have heard of their dedication to the people in their city. I've met Magda in Sigishwara, Pastor. She's in Tigmandru, that's right. Magda's in Tigmandru. She and her husband minister to that community so brilliantly, so effectively, so selflessly. And I can't begin to tell you the impact that the Church of the Nazarene has in these places. I never met Roberta, I never met Betty, or Tamea, or Anka. They came after I was there, but there were girls before them with very similar stories. Very similar stories that were ministered to in very similar ways by the same people. And they were ministered to because of the World Evangelism Fund. And they will continue to be ministered to going forward, even if when the Hernans are in Italy, they will be continue to be ministered to because of the World Evangelism Fund. And you folks, all of you here this morning, have the opportunity to participate in that ministry directly through Faith Promise this morning. In your bulletins, you have a little card like this. If you've got a bulletin, you've got a card. Take it out and look at it. Everybody, I want to see him. You're not getting off easy today. I want to see him. Okay. This Faith Promise commitment card gives you the opportunity to support the work of the Church of the Nazarene, not just in Romania, but in other countries where similar work is being done, where work is being done that is consistent with the context that our church finds itself in. And you may say, you know, I can't really give a lot. That's okay, because a little is much when God is in it, right? And we pull it all together throughout the entire denomination and put it into the World Evangelism Fund, which then funds these missions. And maybe you're saying, well, I would love to give. I'd love to give $100, but I don't have $100. Well, that's okay, because this allows you, Faith Promise allows you the opportunity to give $10 a month for the next year. Now, can anybody do the math? What is 10 times 12? 120? So you wanted to give $100. You only give 10 at a time, which is a lot easier to do, isn't it? And you end up giving more than what you anticipated. Or maybe you can give $5 a month. Maybe you can give $50 a month. Maybe you have planned for this all year. I know that some of us are a little more old school. When it comes to Faith Promise, we plan for it and we give it all in one lump sum on Faith Promise Sunday, which is what this is today, right? Along with being Pentecost Sunday, in case any of you forgot. It's also Pentecost Sunday. So you can give weekly, you can give monthly, you can give annually, but indicate it on the big part of the card and drop that into the box out on the well. The little part of the card, tear it off, make note of the commitment that you've made, and put this somewhere where you will not forget what your commitment is, okay? Keep that for yourself, but this card goes in the box on the well. If you're wanting to put in an offering, just a one-time annual offering for Faith Promise, please make sure, whether you do it online or you put it in the well, that you indicate it's for Faith Promise, okay? That's very important. Now, additionally, we get the privilege and the honor of showing how much we love and appreciate the Herndon family. They have been, well, we've known them as our Lynx missionaries now for quite a while. Thanks to the pandemic, we got to keep them a little extra. they've changed that terminology. Now they've been our Care and Connect missionaries. We're getting used to the new terminology. But we have the opportunity as a denomination, as a congregation, to love and support their mission as they go from Romania to Italy by doing a love offering. Again, we're going to collect that love offering either at the well or online. You just need to make sure that you indicate that it's for the Herndons. Okay, one way or the other, we just need to know that it's going directly to them. And, you know, I have been away a little while from South Lake, but not so long that I don't remember what a generous congregation you folks are. I've never doubted when we have stood before you and asked for a love offering or Faith Promise commitments or Easter offerings or Thanksgiving offerings. I've never doubted that the people of South Lake were generous people, and I don't doubt it now. Like I said, I've been away a little while, but not that long. There's some new faces, but the faces that I do know, I know how generous you are. So I'm just trusting that you will listen to the Lord this morning and give what he lays on your heart to give. Again, whether it's for Faith Promise and for the Herndon. Just going to go there and ask you to do both. And with that, this wasn't on the program, but, you know, we're going to roll with it. Pray with me, will you? Heavenly Father, we thank you. I thank you for each person that is here today. Lord, I thank you for the people who couldn't be here for whatever reason. And I ask your deepest and richest blessings on each one, that as they are obedient to the voice that you are speaking to them with, Lord, that they in turn would find a blessing that's beyond their expectations. Lord, go with these people. Go with each one, with people who are watching online, the folks that have joined us that way, Lord. May they also know your deepest blessings. Keep us safe, keep us healthy, and bring us back together in your good time and according to your good will. We pray this in your name. Amen. And now, the Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord turn his face toward you.